You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Giant Splash podcast. I'm your host, Chronicle Giants beat writer Susan Slusser, and today our guest is Giants CEO Larry Baer. This is a good week to welcome Larry onto the podcast because, of course, the home opener is Friday. Larry, welcome. How are things going? How are the preparations coming for getting things opened up finally for fans on Friday?
Well, thanks, Susan. Things are going well, and I have to say, there's so much pent-up demand, I think, both, you know, in the community, but also within the Giants organization to be able to welcome back fans. And it's, believe it or not, it's been 18 months or so, since September of 2019, since fans were last able to attend a baseball game. And, you know, it's going to be, I think, a day, and then the first homestand will be really a feeling of gratitude and reflection that we've been through a lot in the last year as a community, but ballparks are really a way for people to come together. And although there'll be some physical separation, and we'll be sitting in pods, and we won't be literally next door to strangers as we're sitting in the ballpark, I think there'll be a great feeling of community and camaraderie. And I think it'll be emotional for me, I know, when we get to Friday at 1:35 for the first pitch, and even the ceremonies beginning earlier around 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, what sort of fun things are planned? Do you guys have a few maybe tricks up your sleeve with things to welcome fans back with?
We do, and in traditional form, we're not going to do too many reveals before Friday, but we are going to have, you know, I think a really meaningful set of ceremonies that will recognize all that we've been through as a community. And it'll be, it'll be upbeat. It'll also be, recognize the heroism that has been just such a part of our community, and a word that we're going to be using a lot because I think it represents our community really well. And that word is resilience. And I think the folks that you'll see honored on opening day will be individuals who demonstrated resilience through all we've been through in the last year, and it's also a lot of gratitude for them, and it's a first chance for folks in San Francisco to really to get together in larger numbers and pay their respects and pay their tribute.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, I know that Governor Newsom, in fact, before we started talking, was mentioning that maybe sometime in June, full opening of the economy, I think mid-June. What is the hope level there that perhaps at some point you get a full stadium?
I don't know if you can hear it, but I'm knocking on wood right now and crossing fingers. You can't hear me crossing fingers. Maybe you can hear the knocking on wood. You know, what we're trying to do really, Susan, is we're trying to, you know, look to, you know, May being better than April and June being better than May. And we know it's an incremental process. And we know the health numbers have to remain good. We're really proud of San Francisco, the Bay Area in general, and the San Francisco community specifically, because the numbers have been terrific, compared to other parts of the world. And I say terrific, that's not to diminish the fact that there are certain people certainly that have suffered in our own community, but relatively good. And if they can continue relatively good and continue to improve, I think, and we can show that the fan safe procedures at the ballpark, which we believe are going to make the ballpark arguably one of the safest places you could be outdoors, that we're going to be able to get ourselves to a place where it's going to feel a lot more like normal and much like the experience we're used to for baseball later in the season. And I don't want to put a date to that, whether it's the All-Star break, whether it's June, whether it's the second half of the season, but we're cautiously optimistic we can get there.
Now, you mentioned to me when we talked briefly over the weekend that you guys were going to be looking at how the Yankees homestand went because they have some of the similar protocols in place that you guys will. Have you had a chance to talk to them? What were your impressions of how things went for them?
Yes, we've talked to the Yankees, and the Yankees have, New York City has some of the same protocols as San Francisco relating to being prepared to show a test of a negative test in the last 72 hours or proof of vaccination. And it went well with the Yankees. It went better than they had forecast. And everybody, the great thing is that the fans in New York, and I think it'll be similar in San Francisco, they understand it's not exactly this going to be the same experience that we're used to at the gates and not the same experiences we're used to at the concession opportunities. As we do concessions online and the various things, but fans were willing to go through those different processes, knowing that just like we were saying a minute ago, that we'll come out the other end in a place that probably in 2021, hopefully in 2021, we'll be able to be back to a normalized situation. So I think the fans have that in the back of their mind, and they're really really. Encouraged by and want back to baseball and in person. And having been to a game, as I know you have, games without fans, it's just the game of baseball really thrives on the energy of the fans. And having the fans back, even in numbers of about 9,000 on opening day, 8,800, 8,900, that's a meaningful difference versus zero.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think the fans will ever be taken for granted by anyone. Again, on the business side of baseball teams, which you run, I can't imagine anybody ever has taken fans for granted. But I've heard of so many players and media members saying, oh, I miss the fans. You were at some of the games in Scottsdale. How did you feel things went there with also limited capacity?
Well, things went well. We were very conservative, and I think that's if there's any message for the fans is that we are really looking out for your interests in terms of safety, health and safety. And we want the fans to trust us, and I think in Arizona, we're able to test some things and the distance seating and the way to do concessions. While the protocols in Arizona were different than San Francisco, we really doubled down and went beyond what was required because we felt that we wanted to just to make sure that we had safety for not just the fans but also for our employees, the people that were working in Arizona. It was a slightly older workforce also. And so it went well. It was safe, and we expanded the number of fans that we allowed as we, over time. We started only in the 500 to 700 range, and then we ended up in the 1500 to 1800 range. So we tested all the systems and created some good learnings for when we open here in San Francisco.
That's great. Now, did you were obviously able to go to games at Oracle Park last year, but did you have a cutout too?
We did. Our family had a cutout. I seated when I went to the games. I was seated, separate from my cutout. So I guess I was there in duplicate. But I have to say that there was I was happy to see the games played. But I have to say, Susan, I don't know if you felt this way, that it was almost a hollow experience, and it was sort of a sobering experience being there because. As I said earlier, I mean, the energy of the ballpark and it's a community feeling, and it's, it's high-fiving the person next to you when something good happens for the Giants, even if you may not even know that person, right? If it's somebody sitting next to you and the family connections and everything and all that my favorite activity, one of my favorite activities in the ballpark, and I won't be able to do this initially this year, is to walk through the stands and see mothers and sons and fathers and daughters and grandparents and grandchildren and high five them and just see that, soak up the energy of a great community experience. And that was missing last year, and we're getting a little bit of that back, as we start this season, and hopefully we'll get it all back soon. And, And that's, you know, that's something that's really, I think, in many ways unique to baseball. And you don't necessarily have that as much in the other sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I know so many people that have formed lifelong friendships just at the ballpark, you know, from people they sit next to regularly or, you know,
for sure,
wound up talking to in a concession line or something. I mean, that's
right. Also the people along those lines that work at the ballpark.
Yeah.
We've had, you know, I guess services staff are ushers and security and ticket takers and ticket sellers through the years who've got to know the customers, and they go to their life events. They go to birthday parties of their customers, and they go to, you know, bar mitzvahs and weddings and everything. And, they get birth announcements when somebody in their seating section has a baby. I mean, it's really a beautiful thing, and it's, and extends over decades.
Oh man, it's going to be so great to see all of those people again. Now let's turn the focus to the team on the field. I know this is not your purview. That's of course in the baseball operations people. But so far, what are your impressions of the team as somebody who watches every game and runs the whole shebang?
Well, I think we're pleased with the direction we're going. And again, you know, it's been a situation where we're trying to create a trajectory where, as some of the younger players that are going to be in the minor leagues this year, or at least start in the minor leagues, as they develop, we're able to stay competitive at the major league level. And that's something that's tricky, winning and developing, but it's also, we think with, you know, Farhan and Scott and Gabe, it's also doable. So we want to be really competitive. Right now, as we speak, we're at 500, beat the Padres last night. We think that we have some, you know, really good play 1-year contracts on some players, and we also have some players who've been around a while who have shown that they've got a lot left in the tank, whether it's Evan Longoria or Buster Posey. And so I think it's that mix with the younger players that are going to be coming and some of the younger players who are here now, you know, in the outfield with Yaz and Dickerson, et cetera, and Solano. So, I mean, it's an interesting mix, and we think it's also a team of good personalities,
yeah,
right? And I know you've got to know some of them. And mm-hmm. By the way, welcome to the Giants beat.
Oh, thank
I should
you.
Have said that at the beginning. We're thrilled to have you, with us. You know, going forward, hopefully for many, many, many years. You know, Giants beat writers, by the way, don't tend to come and go.
They tend
to stay around for decades.
Absolutely, that's the plan. That's a plan. Talk to my boss, I guess.
And the other thing, Susan, is I do think that the systems that have been put in place as it relates to instruction. I think it's pretty noticeable that the improvement in the offensive statistics and the offensive approach through the hitting coaches and through Gabe and through the folks that have been working with our position players, you know, that was noticeable last year, and it seems to be picking up. You had 4 games. I don't want to make too much out of 4 games, but it appears to be picking up, you know, just where we left off last year. And, you know, if there was ever kind of a hallmark of the Giants through the years, long term, it's been, you know, a power hitting team. If you go back to Mays and McCovey and Bonds, etc. And right now, as we sit, I believe we are tied for the major league lead in home runs.
Yes, that sounds right. I mean, Evan Longoria all by himself, I think, practically.
So it's not, I don't want to make too much out of 4 games, but I think that it's going to be exciting. And I think also, you know, we're going to be, you know, we're a versatile approach where if something isn't working or adjustments need to be made in the middle of the season, I think you've seen that Farhan and Scott are willing to do that. And, you know, we'll not, you know, if we have run some bumps on the road, as you saw we did last year, we'll adjust as we go.
We'll be back in just a moment with more with Giants CEO Larry Baer in just a moment. But a reminder, you can find all our Giants coverage and the rest of our baseball coverage at sfchronicle.com. And to subscribe, you can go to sfchronicle.com/pod.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You mentioned sort of the fact that your team is really getting this reputation for kind of cutting edge data and a coaching staff that it can apply it. And obviously the on the pitching side, that's the case too. I think you guys are attracting free agents who feel like this it's a good landing spot for bounce back seasons. Obviously Gausman last year and Smiley, you know, DeSclafani, Aaron Sanchez, guys like that. What are your impressions on kind of how that is all coming together, especially with this very big, very young coaching staff, but kind of right, you know, right in the mix with all the advanced technology and data?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think that where we are now in baseball, it used to be sort of on the analytics side, it was who you drafted and the advantage, the competitive advantage was on who you drafted or how you evaluated. And now it's really become sort of the real ground of competition is the ability to develop, or the ability to take a pitcher or a position player and develop them in the minor leagues, or actually develop them in real time in the major leagues. And that's where the competitive advantage is if you can do it. And we really feel good about the coaches on both sides of the ball. I didn't want to just highlight our hitting coaches. Our pitching coaches have been terrific. I mean, Kevin Gausman had a breakout year last year and a great first start this year. And DeSclafani, we feel is somebody in that category that has the ability to really emerge and had a really good outing last night in San Diego. So that's something that I think, you know, all the teams are focused on, but you have to have the right folks to do it. And we are really confident in the coaching staff we have. And we're thrilled by the fact that the coaching staff came back in total from last year. Yeah. So there was one that got recruited away, but pretty much, you know, 12 out of 13 is not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good. 13's a lot, but yeah, it's actually very impressive, and they're also young. It's sort of annoying, except for
Lotus.
We think
it was a good investment, though, to have you know, really good coaching. That's a, you know, that's a strong investment for the future.
Absolutely.
You know, can't have too much knowledge.
No, for sure. Now, do business executives have favorite players? Do you not like to play favorites? I mean, you could cheat and say Mays, but do you find yourself with, you know, secretly kind of rooting for, I mean, you're rooting for all of them, obviously, but do you have some favorites?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you develop relationships with the players through the years, although I have to say within COVID last year and this year, you know, it's the interaction is really confined to texts and emails or phone calls. You know, it's interesting. My favorites tend to be not necessarily the superstars, but the guys that go all out and really give everything. So on the field. So it's not at the expense of anybody else, but I would, you know, say like somebody that is a favorite because I did get to spend some time with him before. Spring training was curtailed last year, and actually when he came over to the Giants the year before in a trade, is Dubon. He's just such I just love his story, you know, from Honduras, which is a first, you know, very very few players if any have ever come from Honduras, goes to Sacramento, reveres Brandon Crawford in growing up in Sacramento because he played his position and saw the Giants win championships with Craw at shortstop. And then, and even though, Doobie is playing center field now, which is great. And has turned in, you know, we think to, a really good, center fielder, you know, his shortstop second base was his position before. And it's just a great story. It's kind of like almost turn back the clock story to Brandon Crawford holding up the sign as a 4-year-old with his dad at the games following the Giants and saying, save my Giants back in the 90s when the Giants almost moved. So I love the human interest stories and the way that you can sort of circle back. So those are the stories I like to gravitate to and the people. But, you know, and there's, you know, so many other great folks. I mean, Buster and Kristen Posey and what they've done in conjunction with the Giants organization and on their own with their own initiatives around childhood cancer, pediatric cancer. You know, he'll always have a special place in our hearts for the person he is, as well as you know, obviously the Hall of Famer that he is.
Yeah, and man, he looks rejuvenated this year. He and Longoria both. That's great to see. Yeah,
so great to see, because I think when you see teams that do well, they often are a balance. You know, it's not usually an all veteran team, and it's not usually an all young team. It's the teams that kind of get there at the end. Tend to have that mix, and you know, and then you can also add to that mix. I know a lot of times, and we did this with when we had fairly young teams fighting for the playoffs. You know, whether it's adding a Pat Burrell or a Hunter Pence, Marco Scudero in the middle, so you can, you know, the team, as you know, Susan, the team you start out with in April is very rarely the team that you end up with if you're in a pennant race in September. You can add to that.
Yeah. Now, one thing that is your purview, being on the business side, is things that deal with ownership and players and the union and all of that. One thing that's sort of looming after this season, you know, I think you know where I'm going, and it might be a little bit contentious after there were some contentiousness last year in developing all the protocols, and then again this year with the expanded playoffs and the DH conversations. But the CBA. What are your thoughts on the next year's CBA, and you know, how much of an issue might it be? Or are you feeling pretty optimistic about it?
I think it's hard to lay odds. We've been through, since I've been with the Giants now, we've been through what, 4 or 5 CBAs, and there's always at this time when you're a year out, there's always the sort of gathering the information, coming up with the strategy. And that's the stage we're in now. So I can't really handicap it. What I would say is that, you know, while there are differences, I think there's a lot of commitment from the owner side to, you know, to have a system that works for everyone. I think there's commitment from the player side. And I'm optimistic that we'll get there. It's not going to be fast or easy, but I'm optimistic that we'll get there and you know, keep the game on the field for the fans.
What about Universal DH, expanded playoffs? Is it still possible at all this year, or is that something you think maybe for the future?
I think, you know, they'll all be tied to – rule changes will be tied to the CBA because the players, as they should, have input on that. I think the one thing that was clear from last year, and these were COVID-necessitated changes to the rules – but also allowed us to experiment things like the extra inning rule and with the runner on second base. And we had already introduced the 3-batter rule and even the seven inning doubleheader, second game doubleheader. You know, some of those were well received by the fans. And so we're also, you know, it allowed us to do some research and sample fan opinion on some of those rules. So I think there'll be rules that we'll discuss as part of the collective bargaining agreement and see where the players' heads are, and see if, you know, just all in interest to make the game better. A universal DH, same thing. You know, we haven't had a lot of rule changes in baseball, really. If you go through the other sports, you know, basketball with the 3-point line and the NFL with protecting the quarterback. I mean, baseball's been pretty much, other than the original DH in the American League that goes way back into the, what, 90s, this was, or before that even, you know, baseball hasn't had a lot of rule changes. So, you know, to tweak, to make the game better for the fans, I think is in everyone's interest.
Yeah. Now, another area in which you wind up getting involved, and everyone in ownership now kind of winds up getting involved, is politics have kind of come into the game. Every sport at every level, as the recent moving of the All-Star Game showed. And the Giants have a couple of times had to address some issues with one of your principal owners, Charles Johnson, who's kind of stepped back a little bit at this point to various different political organizations. What did you think of the way that the team handle that, the team's stance on some of those things, and are you concerned about this being an issue in the future?
Well, I think that, look, the Giants have always stood in the community for, you know, for on issues that are important to the community. I go back to the early 90s and when we took a stance on AIDS and gay rights, et cetera, where, and that wasn't something that the professional sports teams had done. So we certainly don't shy away from it. I think we also have to recognize, though, that, you know, people come to ball games to enjoy an experience that maybe gets away from politics too. So, you know, if there's an issue in our community that's important, I know, you know, in the wake of 9/11, not all issues that are on our minds are necessarily controversial, right? So I remember in the wake of 9/11, people returned to the ballpark, and, you know, and there was just a coming together, a communal spirit that, you know, that we were grateful to be Americans and grateful to be together. And, you know, and everybody was pretty scared in the days after 9/11. So we look at the ballpark as a town center and as a place where people can come together and enjoy a sense of community. We had for 20 years, we've worked with community leaders on violence prevention issues, you know, that relate to, gun control and other things. So I think that, you know, that there's a role for it, a place for it, and it doesn't have to be, you know, sort of the hardcore, hard scrabble politics either.
Yeah. Well, let's switch back to our original topic, which is the most fun, the home opener Friday. What are you most looking forward to at the ballpark?
I'm most looking forward to the recapturing that feeling, Susan, of just, you know, beginnings, new beginnings that opening day brings. And this is times 10, the normal opening day, because it's not just, you know, the winter is over and the weather is getting nice and here comes, you know, spring and summer, but this is a year of really tough challenges in a community where most of us were, if we could, you know, housebound or, you know, and some folks were working in dangerous and risky, conditions. So I'm looking forward to on Friday is really a sort of rejoicing all of that with all of that and rejoicing that and kind of reflecting on where we've come as a community and the fact that through a lot of really, you know, miracles from human effort, you know, in healthcare workers and food service workers and in the pharmaceutical companies delivering vaccines way faster than anybody thought, that we're getting there, and just a lot of gratitude and being able, even though I can't hug strangers, I can only hug people in my pod, I'm going to do virtual hugs to 8,900 people.
That sounds like a plan. And garlic fries, I think that might be where I head first. I think
the garlic fries, and it's, you know what's great is not just eating the garlic fries, it's the smell of the garlic fries. That's become like the baseball smell, in at least in San Francisco.
For sure. Yeah, I can't wait. Larry Bear, thanks so much for joining us on the Giant Splash, and looking forward to a very fun first homestand for the Giants.
Thanks so much, Susan, and welcome again to The Beat, and it's great to have you, and to our fans, it's just wonderful to have you back at the ballpark. Look forward to seeing you, if not Friday, as we go through games here in the beginning of the season.
Yeah, should be a blast. Thanks again, Larry.
Thanks so much for listening to the Giant Splash podcast. Our producers today were G. Allen Johnson and King Kaufman. We will be back again next week with more Giant Splash.